Welcome to the Fix Podcast here on thesportsvirus.com featuring pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. I'm your host, Joe Castellano, also the host of the San Francisco Giants Inside China Basin Podcast and the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast. The Fix is your bi-weekly show focusing on pitching mechanics, injury prevention, and peak performance on the mound. Angel Borelli has a master's degree in sports science and has been a strength and conditioning coach for 35 years. For the past 20 years, she's worked specifically on investigating pitching deliveries. Pitchers from Little League on up to the big leagues seek out Angel for solutions that will help take them to the next level. She also works with pitchers who are recovering from injuries by giving them customized training programs that will get them back on the mound. And she finds and corrects the flaws that led to the injury in the first place. Education, solutions, and troubleshooting here on the Fix Podcast, also available on the iTunes Podcast app. And welcome to The Fix here on July the 1st, and we'll start by going around the major leagues, as we always do, Angel. And let's start with what's going on in Miami, because on Thursday, Matt Cain has taken the mound for the first time in a year. He hasn't pitched since last July, and Jose Fernandez is coming back from Tommy John surgery for the Florida Marlins. And then for the Giants, the day after the Cain outing, Jake Peavy is coming off the DL. He had a back issue, but for Cain, he's coming back from having his elbow cleaned up, and then he had problems in spring training with the flexor tendon. It's been really kind of a long road back for him when it wasn't really anticipated. It looked like he'd be back at the beginning of the year. He's gone through the rehab. He started in AA, made a start there, made some starts in AAA Sacramento. I saw his last start in Fresno, and he looked really good, looked like he's ready to go. What do you think about, let's start with Matt Cain and going against Fernandez on Thursday?
Well, I think that actually the take-home message I have for all three of them that are starting this week is do not hold back. The biggest error that pitchers can make, and this is the same thing you see when someone gives up a home run and they start nibbling at the plate as opposed to taking a big bite out of their pitch, they hold back, they become tentative, and what ends up happening is their motion changes slightly. When a skill is designed to be a power skill, it's designed to be a speed skill. Anytime you change the normal speed of it, you start to change the mechanics a little bit. And so things that are done quickly need to be done quickly. You don't do them well if you try to do them slowly. It would be like, for example, if you were trying to be perfect with hitting a ball off the tee if you're a golfer and you decided you were going to swing more slowly to be more deliberate, you know that would end up in a nightmare.
Right.
Well, yes. So it's more obvious. It's obvious more with golf that you would never do that. But actually, pitchers sometimes do that. And you sometimes see that, especially a healthy pitcher after he gives up, you know, a grand slam or something. And the way that we know a pitcher is really professional is he doesn't do that. And that's what we want to teach kids to do. It's called bounce back. Well, the injured pitchers have to have that too. And this speaks to the importance of tremendous preparation and for coaches knowing when that pitcher is no longer holding back. When a pitcher when he's facing hitters in these the minor leagues, when they send him back down to face hitters, when you start to see the pitcher holding back, he doesn't look right. He's afraid to throw some of his pitches. That means the pitcher is not ready. All the exercise in the world does not make the pitcher's brain ready. And if the brain isn't ready psychologically, then the muscles aren't going to fire the same way. So what we assume is, especially at the major league level, is that the coaches and that everyone knows this and understands this. They've done all they can do with the body. They've done all they can do with creating great pitch counts for them to get the tissue strong again. And they've observed them facing hitters. They've observed them in the game. And they do not see tentativeness. They do not see anything that shows that the pitcher himself is concerned. Now, the pitcher I'm the most concerned about is Peavy, because when you have back issues, nothing tore, let me rephrase that. He didn't have surgery, so there wasn't like a thing that he had, tangible thing that he had to rehab from. Back injuries can be awful, and the back is very much driven, of course, by the nervous system, since it houses the nervous system. And if anybody here has ever had a back injury, there's certain movements that for a long time you're afraid to make, because you're afraid of pulling something again. Now, we assume that during the preparation phase, all three of them have gone through every single possible scenario. Keep bending over, picking up balls for Petey, Matt Cain letting go on his fastball, all the different things that come with their specific injuries. And so preparation is key, and we never want a pitcher to go in a game where he's not full out. You have to be full out, and actually that is the safest way to pitch. It is unsafe to hold back. And as you see, you can tell that in performance, that if you see a pitcher become tentative, because let's say he just loaded the bases,
mm-hmm.
you see that his performance isn't as well. He starts missing even more. And what we love to see is the pitcher who loads the bases, and he's still bringing it full 100% on his velocity, because he should know that his pitch has a better chance of working when he does it full out. So for all three of those pitchers, they need to not hold back. And that is the take-home message. And the reverse message of that is, if you are holding back, if you are tentative when you're in your preparation games, it means you're not ready. So for all the non-professional pitchers out there, if you hesitate about anything, it means you're almost there, but you're not quite there. And don't go back until that tentativeness is gone.
You know, to follow that, Matt Cain actually told us on this podcast that one of the main aspects of his recovery was the mental hurdle that he had to overcome, because, you know, you wonder about going all out. And with Jake Peavy, I wonder about the mental part, because he didn't pitch well in his last rehab outing. He gave up 6 runs in the first 2 innings of it, and he mm-hmm. basically had to convince Bruce Bochy that he's ready to go. So I don't know mm-hmm. if he's over the mental hurdle.
Well, I would love to see with him, with Peavy, it's his mechanics of his spine that produce the weakness and the vulnerability in him. I mentioned this when we first talked about his injury. He has a style of delivery that exposes the back in a lot of ways to vulnerability. I have not seen if that is something that was addressed with him. And again, if you have a problem, and especially something so specific as a back issue, there's only a few places in the motion you want to look to see, was he doing something that isn't the safest thing for the back? And he was. If that didn't get addressed, he's going to be still vulnerable. And you're telling me he did not do well in the last rehab? I would be looking at that film, and I'd be looking to see, you know, what is really going on here. Now, sometimes you have two types of pitchers. You have Matt Cain, who's saying, whoa, I've got a hurdle to get over in my brain, and that's a hurdle I'm going to take on. Then you've got the other kind of pitcher, who's very much like a youth pitcher, by the way, who says, give me the ball, coach, give me the ball, coach, and he could be bleeding. He could be bleeding. You know, keep me in the game, and he's at 150 pitches. You know, so you have two different types of pitchers. But the performance always tells you something, but the mechanics have to come first. And with Matt Cain having an elbow injury, and also the Marlins pitcher, we know that they're looking at, are his elbow mechanics sound? Peavy's going to be a little more questionable, in my opinion, and I'm hoping that I see a change in his mechanics of the way he used his bat. But here's the deal. The body always wins. Science is always right, whether you believe it or not. So it always comes out on top. So if he is not using his spine correctly, it will let him know, and it'll let him know fairly soon. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
We'll see how that goes. Yeah, this week on Thursday with Cain against Fernandez, and then Peavy scheduled to go on Friday for the Giants. Let's get to our main topic of the podcast, and that's youth pitching. And you've been getting a lot of response from your listeners, Angel. In fact, one of them telling you that there was a 9-year-old who threw maybe 100 pitches one day, 50 the next. So a lot of talk with the youth pitching as far as what kind of, you know, how many pitches they're throwing, recovery time. And let's start with just the maximum number of pitches, because I mean, actually there is a guideline that if you're an 8 to 10 year old, for example, the maximum pitches you would throw would be 50, and the maximum games per week would be 2. And that maximum games per week stands for all kinds of kids from 8 until 18. But the pitch count goes up. If you're a 17, 18 year old, your maximum pitches, it's kind of like in the major leagues where you can go 105 pitches. Tell us about that guideline and how that was established.
Okay, well, actually, there are two types of guidelines that you see out there, and or two different categories of guidelines, and this is why I think there is much confusion. And by the way, the pitch count guideline, the max pitches per game guideline, is not really the one that I follow that I think is important. The one that I think is important is the recovery guidelines, which are for how many days off you have to have from pitches. But so let me just start with the fact that, yes, I've gotten tons of emails from coaches. You all know who you are that write me. From parents, you know who you are too. And I said to myself, this is a ridiculous state of affairs. And we do know that kids are getting injured at an early age. So what can we do with this? Because the USA Baseball came out with guidelines that I have followed since the early, like 2004, 2005. And so I have longitudinal proof that it works. And I know they revised them a little for PitchSmart, which is Dr. Andrews and Dr. Fleissig's website. And then we've got Little League guidelines. And if you put them all on a table and you looked at everything, you'd be so confused. And what I'm wanting to do is lend some clarity, but not on possibly how to follow each set of guidelines, but like which one should you be paying attention to? And the parents that write in and are complaining, the message I want to give to them is that you need to take a stand as well with trying to solve this problem. So when I get a parent that complains about their coach, my first question to my mind is, why are you on that team? So I want parents to listen to what I'm saying and coaches as well. And I want everyone to start thinking about this in a slightly different way. And parents, I want you to take some responsibility. If you day after day find some concern with your coach, then your son should not be on that team. However, if you brought him to that team because that coach wins, then you need to think about that you might be speaking out of both sides of your mouth, so that you want to stop condemning the coach and start thinking about your own responsibility. But that doesn't mean that you have to accept what's going on. It means you want to listen, educate yourself, and then have conversation with the coach. I don't believe in any world a coach wakes up and says, I want to hurt this young kid's arm. So we've got two guidelines, and the ones that I believe are the most important to start with, because they break the guidelines of the max pitches per game. We've got 50 pitches for a 9-year-old. We've got, you know, X number for a 16-year-old. Why are those rules being broken? The rules are probably being broken because at that number of pitches, the pitcher hopefully is still looking really good, and the coach doesn't see a reason to pull him. And I agree with the coach on that level. Now, if the coach does not have the skill to know when the pitcher is failing, that he keeps him in when he's walking hitters, or he's not locating his pitches, then we've got a problem. But let's remember that need to win that drives the coach's bad decisions sometimes will also have him pull a pitcher when he's not doing well. So what we want to see are coaches that can understand each pitcher. The max pitches per game guideline, I think, should be called something like a conditioning guideline. That if the guidelines say that a 9-year-old should be pulled or that 50 pitches is his max, that should be a guideline for conditioning before the season starts. And it should be the guideline for when the coach starts to carefully, very carefully observe that 9-year-old. So that we're using that number to start to look at and make a determination when that pitcher should come out. So that's how I think the number of the max pitches should be used, because they're not being followed. It's the most broken rule of any rule on the guidelines. And I think that if a pitcher is in for 100 pitches, he sure better not have been showing any signs of fatigue. So what I think needs to happen is following some rules first. The pitcher never should pitch with fatigue. And if you follow that rule, and you pull a pitcher when he shows fatigue, you're probably not going to have a pitcher who's in for 100 pitches. So there is a primary rule that's probably being broken before the number. So that's the hierarchy. When he's fatigued, you pull him. And my guess is you're going to end up being in the range of what is recommended. But the guideline that I feel should be the most important one followed is the number of days rest. And the guidelines for when we see on, in fact, anybody can go to my website and get the USA Baseball Recovery Guidelines, and you'll see the minimum rest after pitching. Those guidelines are, should be called the recovery guidelines. And recovery guidelines are more important, in my opinion, than the number of pitch control guidelines that are out there, for the reason being that your best bet to keeping a pitcher safe is that his arm be fully recovered. And the pitchers that are pitching these huge numbers, like the person you mentioned, Joe,
yeah,
there's no way he would have been in 2 days in a row because he would have needed 4 days off after that 100 pitches. So there's no way that he would have been in that next day. So if we start to follow the recovery guidelines, then we know that we're not going to have this pitcher pitching either twice in a day, which is another complaint, I guess, or pitching 2 days in a row, which drives a weekend pitch count so far up. So if we follow recovery guidelines first, and then second, we have all coaches become completely observant of fatigue, and that we use the game max count to kind of cue our eyes like, okay, he's getting to this number, now we really have to watch him. And we're assuming he's performing well, meaning you're not losing the game, he's not walking people, that if we do those two things, then all those other numbers will fall away. We'll have pitchers taking the mound, getting the recovery between starts. We'll have coaches that are watching for the signs of fatigue, which are always, observably, he's just not doing well. Secondly, his stride length has changed. And thirdly, his arm is not in the place it usually is. His release point's going to change. His whole arm will drop. It's one of those issues is going to come up. And if we do those things, then we can start to become organized with this whole issue of too many pitches, too many games, not enough rest, et cetera. And I think the fact there's so many guidelines distills the message. And the purpose of this show is to undistill that, to say, no, look at recovery first. Do not let that pitcher pitch again in a bullpen or in a game until his arm has recovered from the number of pitches that he threw prior. And then we're going to have a whole different kind of thing happening. We start with that. We start with educating the coaches on fatigue and making sure they're observant. And then all of a sudden it will all come together. And that's the way I think that some of us who are going to take a stand need to start operating. And I recommend to parents that you don't go to the coach 2 minutes before the game, that give him respect like anybody else, and you meet with him and say, listen, this is what we want for our son. These are the recovery guidelines. And that you just hit him with that and say, when he pitches, he's done for the day. You know, he can't pitch again. And if his pitch count is such and such, we need X number of days off. And parents, you need to be getting out calendars, and you need to know how many pitches your son is throwing, or you need to go immediately to the record keeper at the end of the game to see how many pitches he threw in the game.
I would think, especially if you're a relief pitcher, right, Angel? Because, I mean, it's a little more complicated. You may pitch, back-to-back days or one day and then get 1 day of rest, maybe not as many pitches, but isn't that a little more complicated?
Well, yeah, in the youth leagues, they don't call them relief pitchers, although they'll have certain guys that they bring in. But what's interesting that you're bringing up is in the major leagues, they're very careful not to use their guys 2 days or to let them go over a certain pitch count. In other words, you wouldn't see them putting Mariano in the fifth inning, right?
Right.
Or the sixth inning, even if the Yankees were way behind. Why? Because they observably knew, that the closer himself only had so many pitches, and that's a whole thing about fiber type, et cetera, et cetera. But believe it or not, that same kind of thing is happening in every pitcher. So for coaches to be as sensitive to the to their starters as they are sometimes to their middle relief and closers, knowing, oh boy, we never want to put them in for more than one inning, and then they just, you know, they set the whole game up that way. So yeah, I think that that's a good point, and absolutely, this is about skill of coaching. I think that has to happen, and coaches need to be given those tools, especially at the youth level where we've got the poor fathers donating their time, and they don't want to hurt anybody. But let me tell you, they want to win.
And they want to win, but also, you know, you got to make sure you protect these pitchers even when they're not in games, because you mentioned something I thought was very intriguing about how you don't even want to throw in between those starts, get your full rest, because the major league level, you know, starters, they're throwing in the bullpen the second day after their start.
Yes, exactly. Playing catcher between starts is great, and that's up to the pitcher as to how much he wants to do. And I have learned this from observing all my pitchers, and I've worked with some great pitchers. So playing catch is cool. But no, they need the recovery because the tissue is not recovered. And if the tissue is not recovered, the brain will not use that tissue again. And that tissue is really sort of like, think of the way a string might pull a lever up, and it pulls it in a certain way. Well, if that string isn't healthy, when you pull the lever up, it's not going to pull the same way. Well, that's the way the brain is. It's not going to fire the same part of the muscle, so you're not going to get performance. So if coaches would follow recovery, and this is for the major leagues, I think the biggest mistake the major leagues is making is exactly what you brought up. These guys are not getting enough recovery. So he makes a start on Sunday. He takes 4 days off. He pitches the next day, does a bullpen, and the number of pitches he throws is controlled by when he's making his next start. And if it's the next day, then he only throws 15 pitches, and he's ready to go. He is going to be a better pitcher than the one who didn't take the time off, took one day, pitched again on Tuesday, pitched again on Wednesday, took Thursday off, and started on Friday. So to me, the coach that's putting your best pitcher in the same day, a second time, or the next day, why are you wanting to put him in? Because he's so good. Guess what? He's not going to be that same pitcher. He will not produce the same way. And if he does, it will be driven by his mental state that he's going to get it done, but he's getting it done at the risk and at the expense of his body. So if there's a group of us that can start to take a stand against this and educate the coaches and start paying more attention to that than any other number on these sheets that are handed out. And, you know, I mean, the Little League goes by innings, if you can believe this. They'll say a kid at a certain age can throw X number of innings. Well, what if you throw 100 pitches in one inning because you couldn't find the plate? So we've got to take everything and narrow it down, and the focus should be on recovery. If you do just that, everything else will fall in place.
Yeah, not every pitcher is Madison Bumgarner in Game 7 of the World Series, I guess, right?
Exactly. And that's the unusual things that pitchers and people and humans can do are because we are capable of unusual feats, depending on the situation. And that's the beauty of being a human. We never know what's going to happen next. However, the mother who picked the car up off her baby who was under it, who had this unusual strength that nobody can explain, I don't think she wants to pick a car up every day just because she found out she could.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so everybody, let's start with following the what's called minimum rest after pitching, which I think should be called recovery guidelines. And recovery guidelines should be the one thing. Get your hands around that. Get your brain around that. Get your coaches' brains around that. Follow nothing but that, and everything else will start to level out. And then we'll see what comes up, and then we can start to reformat some of the other issues, I think.
Well, what's coming up next for us, it's time to talk
velocity.
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 And look at that, triple digits, 101 on our gun.
All right, so not everybody can throw 101, 106, or Aroldis Chapman. But you know what? When you are throwing whatever it is, 95, 96 from the windup, How about from the slide step delivery? You know, from the stretch, we always wonder about velocity, Angel. I mean, can you keep the same velocity? How about the slide step delivery that pitchers employ when they're trying to keep runners close, not to get a good jump on a stolen base? I mean, I'm always amazed at the pitchers who can have that slide step. That way they're avoiding stolen bases and they still have a good delivery where they can still maintain velocity. How do they do it?
Well, it's actually a good point you're making, which is my tip for the week on velocity, which is that you have to be sure that you're following the rules of what creates a good motion so that you can don't leave, as I call it, miles per hour on the mound. And so a pitcher has more than one type of delivery. He's got usually from the stretch with the knee lift. Then he's got the windup. And some pitchers also have a third type, which is a slide step, which isn't really much of a knee lift at all. It's just a step straight out. And yes, the reason why they change their delivery is because, and I was always intrigued by this when I first started studying pitching, is the coaches who are standing there with a stopwatch, by the way, in practices, they want you to be as quick to the plate, if not quicker, when someone's on base to avoid bases being stolen. So you want to give the runner less time to see where you're at in the motion. In other words, boom, there you are, you're all of a sudden delivering the ball. And what I always wondered about is, well, if you don't know how to do those other deliveries correctly, like the knee lift or from the stretch or a slide step, which has no knee lift, if the style with which you've chosen to be quicker to the plate causes you to have less velocity, I scratched my head and said, well, why would you do that? And so, but I think the spirit of it is that, yes, you want to have less motion, and I think that is critical because the runner then doesn't have as much time to figure things out. And I think every pitcher, in order to see top velocity, has to understand that regardless of whether you're lifting your knee or where you're turning or you're stepping, that you have to have weight over the rear leg before you begin your stride. And this is not only a main tenet of having a good stride, which I talked about at the beginning of the season in mechanics, but it's also the way that you make the movements that to a pitcher seem like they have less mojo. I mean, I have pitchers that say, I can't get my velocity from the stretch. They get something from making that turn from the windup onto their back leg. And what they're getting is they're getting really efficient loading of the back hip. So what's critical for velocity is that every pitcher makes sure that he's still using the same rules. Now, the rule from the windup is that as you turn, and, you know, let's take a right-handed pitcher. He's facing, taking his signs. He's got his feet on the rubber. He steps with his right leg. He turns, and that turning motion makes it real easy for him to get all his weight up on top of the right leg. Now, the reason why we want that weight there, the reason for this style, is because that right hip is loaded. And when I say hip, I mean hip. Pitchers think they get to the front leg from their knee or their ankle. No, the muscle that pushes your body forward is right. If you put your hand on the side of your hip, it's right located in that area. It's called the gluteus medius for anybody who wants to Google it. Mm-hmm. And that muscle is what moves the pelvis, the hips sideways. That muscle has to be loaded because it's actually stretched the way the shoulder is stretched before it accelerates the ball. And when that muscle is loaded, and this is true for golfing too, anybody who's a golfer, if you're in the middle of the ball and you don't shift one way to the side, you're just going to swing it's going to be a weird swing. There's got to be what's called to golfers weight shift, and it's called the same thing in pitching. So from the stretch, if the pitcher's thinking, I've got to really be fast and I've got to lift this knee, and the lifting of one leg always shifts the weight to the back leg, but he's starting in the middle and just kind of lifts his foot up and hardly moves back, then he's going to have a problem. So the suggestion is after you take your signs and come set, if you're going to be doing a tiny knee lift from the stretch, when you come set, have more weight on the back leg at that time. So when you lift your knee, whether it's 2 inches off the ground or a higher knee lift, your weight will be there on that leg. from the slide step, it is exactly the same issue. And I work with the slide step with pitchers when I'm working on timing issues between their arms and lower body. I like to remove the knee lift temporarily just to get timing down. And what I noticed is my pitchers that stand in the middle, stand with both their legs apart and their bodies in the middle, and then they just step out further. They don't have anything on their ball at all, and they hate it. Well, once I say, hey, the slide step just means you're just not lifting your leg, and I shift them to the back hip with more weight on the back hip, then that muscle becomes engaged. So the key with efficient mechanics and velocity is allow the muscle that's used to be in position to be used efficiently. And with anything requiring weight shift, it's the hip muscles that push the body sideways. And they're called the hip abductors. And anybody who wants to Google it, find the muscle, find it, look at it, feel it when you're shifting, and it'll be a whole new world for you. And you too, Joe, next time you get out out to do a little bit of golfing, I think you should do some Googling and find that picture and check this out with your weight shift.
I know. I want to hit the ball farther. Yeah, and once you get used to being good at something, and I think with the slide step, it's such an advantage now that the guys who don't have it, I almost look at it and say, you know, you really need to get that because it's such an advantage for a pitcher to be able to keep those runners from getting a great jump, stealing bases. It's become such an important part of baseball.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that the reason why I started using it, and this has just been in the last year, I designed, within my teaching methods, I designed movements that work with the slide step, is that, and I can say this absolutely as a troubleshooter, 95% of the problems with guys' mechanics, with their arm being late, most of the errors occur at the beginning of the motion. 95% of them occur at the beginning of the motion.
Right.
And out of that 95%, 99% will be because of some strange way they lift their knee or some strange way they start their stride. And then there's so many gimmicks out there to increase the length of the stride, et cetera. I mean, the way you move to your front leg, the front leg is where everything happens. If you're doing something really crazy at the first part of your motion, you're coming off that back leg with your knee still raised up, you're not lowering it, or you're just trying to accelerate as fast as you can, which is ridiculous because then you have to put your brakes on at the time when you need to be, like, getting going. Most of the problems occur with the knee lift. So what I do is, to correct problems, I make the pitching motion look like a jumping jack at the beginning. Their arms are at the side. Their legs are at the side. They step out. Their arms go up. And that's how I reestablish the pitcher's innate sense of timing. I mean, think about it. There's very few people that would do a jumping jack and have their arms and legs not be sequenced. The reason why is because that's an innate sense of timing that we all have. So what I do is make that pitching motion look like a half jack to begin with, and then I add in the glove, and then I add the knee lift back in, and then boom, the pitcher's got his timing back. So the slide step, I agree with you, it's clean, it's simple, and definitely if you're starting in the middle, you want to make sure that when you come set, you have some weight over your back leg. Don't feel like, oh, I'm moving away from my target and it's going to make me slower. No, you're saying hello to the muscle that's going to move you. And guess what? It'll move you twice as fast as when you're in the middle of your slide step position.
All right, I'm going to go do my jumping jacks now. I'm ready to get ready for this. Angel, thanks a lot and look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, great. Thanks, Joe.
That's pitching mechanics expert Angel Borelli. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions or comments, send an email to angel@jimscience.com. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to the Fix Podcast on thesportsvirus.com.